Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, crew, welcome back to the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I got one today from a first-time author on the show, and I've done a little bit of digging, but I intend to go quite a bit further with his work. But this is from John Backus, and that's B-A-C-K-U-S. And you can find him on Twitter at Backus, just his last name. But this one was a really interesting piece. And so I think it's going to be really fun. It's a little bit of a history through peer-to-peer file sharing, as well as what made one protocol valuable versus another. And it's titled, Fat Protocols Aren't New: What Blockchain Can Learn from Peer-to-Peer File Sharing. Before we get into this, though, I want to just give the introduction of a link that he quotes quite a few times in this article about fat protocols, because Backus doesn't really define it, and I'm sure there are a number of you out there who don't really know the specifics of what a fat or thin protocol is. So I'm going to read the opening of the Union Square Ventures, fat protocols piece. Quote, "Here's one way to think about the differences between the internet and the blockchain. The previous generation of shared protocols, TCP/IP, HTTP, SMTP, etc., produced immeasurable amounts of value, but most of it got captured and reaggregated on top at the application's layer, largely in the form of data. Think Google, Facebook, and so on. The internet stack, in terms of how value is distributed, is composed of thin protocols and fat applications. As the market developed, we learned that investing in applications produced high returns, whereas investing directly in protocol technologies generally produced low returns. This relationship between protocols and applications is reversed in the blockchain application stack. Value concentrates at the shared protocol layer, and only a fraction of that value is distributed along at the applications layer. It's a stack with fat protocols and thin applications." End quote. So I think that's as far as we need to go to kind of give you an idea of what they mean by fat protocols. And now we will go ahead and jump into John Backus' piece, Fat Protocols Aren't New: What Blockchain Can Learn from P2P File Sharing. Starting in 1999, we saw an explosion of peer-to-peer file sharing technology. We had Nutella, the protocol behind LimeWire, FastTrack for Kazaa, eDonkey, and BitTorrent. LimeWire, Kazaa, and eDonkey all died, but the protocols they helped create lived on. People have speculated on what a future with fat protocols will look like. Link. File sharing protocols aren't exactly the same, but they have a lot of similarities we can learn from. Look at the peer-to-peer ecosystem. A few things are clear. Fat protocol ecosystems have way more variety and experimentation when network effects don't stop people from creating new clients. Protocols live on and evolve, regardless of whether the original creators are working on them or not. The application layer seems to capture little value for the protocol creator, but third-party competition to build on top of the protocol may be a powerful force for finding product-market fit. And while people weren't able to figure out how to integrate a token into peer-to-peer file-sharing technologies back in the day, it does seem like a properly calibrated token marketplace would have solved a lot of problems and accelerated peer-to-peer's breakneck adoption even more. Vibrant and competitive ecosystems. Quote, by replicating and storing user data across an open and decentralized network, rather than individual applications controlling access to disparate silos of information, we reduce the barriers to entry for new players and create a more vibrant and competitive ecosystem of products and services on top. End quote. FAT Protocols from Union Square Ventures. What file sharing application did you use before BitTorrent? Was it LimeWire, BearShare, Shareaza, Gift, Morpheus, Fex, or Acquisition? All of those were separate applications made by different teams that all connected to Nutella Network, Link. There was also FrostWire, LimeWire Pirate Edition, and WireShare, which were forks of LimeWire's client. I'm not going to do the same song and dance here listing a dozen clients for FastTrack and eDonkey, but I could, Link. Every protocol had tons of clients. In fact, LimeWire wasn't the creator of the Nutella protocol. Their app was just really popular because they added a lot of features. Features. People didn't all just build near identical clients, of course. Different companies competed to build clients to the Nutella protocol that served different needs. BearShare seemed to focus on building a good client. It had a straightforward search, a quote theater to preview movies and music while they were downloaded, and plenty of other features like a place to chat with other users. Quality. The eDonkey company developed their own network, eDonkey 2000 Network, and a corresponding client. Even though they developed the protocol, they had to compete with a very popular open source client called eMule, which many viewed as having a better user interface. Generalization. Some people tried improving the user experience via better interfaces. Others tried to provide access to as much content as possible by creating clients that used multiple networks. Shareaza became popular by supporting every file sharing protocol under the sun. Quote, Shareaza supports the Nutella, Nutella 2, eDonkey, BitTorrent, FTP, HTTP, and HTTPS network protocols and handles magnet links, ED2K links, and the now deprecated Nutella and Piolet links. End quote. Abstraction. The Gift project, Link, was similar to Shareaza in trying to implement every protocol, but it aimed to be a file sharing backend that others could build user interfaces for. Gift supported most protocols and was compatible with Windows, Linux, and Mac. There were hundreds of third-party applications for interfacing with the FAT protocols of the file sharing world. Both open source communities and independent for-profit companies leaped on the opportunity of providing what they thought end users wanted. These applications are not similar to third-party Twitter clients. These clients can do anything the protocol supports, and the protocol creators can't stop them. A potential takeaway here is that FAT protocols split product market fit into two distinct parts. One, protocol market fit. Is the protocol powerful and general enough to let applications give users a good experience? Two, application consumer fit. Does the application optimize how the end user wants to use the protocol? You can't just ship a product and call it a day. eDonkey's client popularized their network, and LimeWire popularized Nutella. Once the protocol has network effects, though, it is anyone's ballgame to build a better interface and steal away users of the original front end. Competitors don't have to totally re-envision the front end. They can just subtract annoying things like ads. That is what Kazaa Lite, FrostWire, WireShare, and many others did. The incentives for app consumer fit and protocol market fit are different. If the protocol doesn't protect against prisoner's dilemma incentive issues, applications can differentiate by acting selfishly. Kazaa Lite and GreedyTorrent both help you lie to the network about how much you've uploaded. A core tenet of the Y Combinator playbook for startups is to talk to your users. Link. If you're interested in building a third-party app on top of a FAT protocol, the lesson might be to also talk to competing apps' users to figure out what needs aren't being served. In a similar vein, protocol developers should talk to app developers and learn what they think end users want. Are thin applications less valuable? Quote, this relationship between protocols and applications is reversed in the blockchain application stack. Value concentrates at the shared protocol layer, and only a fraction of that value is distributed along at the applications layer. End quote. FAT Protocols from Union Square Ventures. It is very hard for the creators of FAT protocols to monetize through their thin applications. LimeWire, Kazaa, and eDonkey attempted to monetize their clients by installing toolbars, collecting user data, and displaying ads. Maybe these brought in some money, but it quickly resulted in competitive forks of the apps without these nuisances. If someone visits your website today with an ad blocker, you can still ask them to pay at least. If a user starts using a different front end, you lose the ability to communicate with them entirely. People don't care about protocols. It might be hard for protocol creators to capture value through their own thin clients. Third-party clients not created by the protocol creators do seem to provide value with time. FrostWire was originally a fork of LimeWire, but years later, when BitTorrent became the clear peer-to-peer winner, they added BitTorrent support. Morpheus, Acquisition, ML Donkey, and many others did the same. Application developers just care about giving their users a good experience. They aren't loyal to a particular FAT protocol. If a previously popular protocol is overthrown by a new one, a third-party application developer might update to the new protocol with minimal impact to the end user. Parallel lean startups. The Lean Startup Methodology, LINC, says that every startup is a grand experiment that attempts to answer a question. The key insight is that startups are all about iterating and trying out ideas until you find product market fit. Steve Blank formalizes startup iteration, LINC, with this loop: hypothesis, design experiments, test, insight, hypothesis, etc. Remember, there were dozens of applications for each popular P2P FAT protocol, each trying their own approach. Different teams with different ideas about what people wanted, each iterating on their own designs and trying to find application consumer fit. Finding product market fit for traditional companies may be inherently serial. Link. While finding application consumer fit may be embarrassingly parallel. Link. Specialization. While FAT protocols generalize over a concept like sharing files, thin applications can specialize as much as they want. BitTorrent is for anything, but Popcorn Time specializes in streaming movies. Link. The most private torrent community in the world exclusively shares copyrighted magic tricks. Link. eDonkey network clients specialized around video because the eDonkey protocol was really good at dealing with big files. We shouldn't just think of thin applications as a vicious competition to build the best front end for a protocol. If the FAT protocol is sufficiently general, application developers can create an entirely different user experience by focusing on a particular use case. Protocol improvements. Quote, the evolution of these protocols will be governed by the decision of those who have adopted it to adopt a future version. This has the potential to provide a much more democratic process for changing protocols over time than the historic committee process. End quote. Crypto Tokens and the Coming Age of Protocol Innovation by Albert Wanger. there were a lot of competing protocols in the P2P space, and they all evolved with time. While there weren't token holders for these protocols, I think we can still learn a lot from protocol evolution in the P2P space. Emule versus eDonkey. As I mentioned in the previous section, the open source Emule client gave eDonkey quite the run for its money. Emule actually went even further and basically forked the protocol. To push the eDonkey universe closer to pure decentralization, the creators of the protocol released Overnet. Link. Overnet was a proprietary protocol storing all file and peer information in distributed hash tables using a protocol called Kademlia. In response, the Emule community launched the CAD network, an open source protocol built on distributed hash tables using Kademlia. Since Emule was very popular, the CAD network may have actually been more popular than Overnet. Separate from the CAD network, Emule introduced a credit system to try to incentivize users to share more. Community development. Nutella was created at AOL, and it was never actually open sourced. AOL killed the Nutella client almost immediately after the creators released it. Link. Still, people shared the Nutella client and reverse engineered the protocol. Every successful application built on top, LimeWire, BearShare, Morpheus, was building on a protocol they didn't originally create. The Nutella protocol evolved. If you look at the draft for version 0.6, LimeWire and BearShare, quote, free peers, contributed a lot of new features to the protocol, and the community generally worked together to create the spec. When a lone developer created a new protocol, called it Nutella 2, and tried to push it on the Nutella development community, people freaked out. Quote, flames on, all caps. Well, I am f***ing sick and tired of waiting for something to happen. Do you hear me? No more Shiraza. Shiraza will be banned. I don't care if he publishes the specs or gives up the domain name. It's too f***ing late. I've had enough. That asshole Mike should take his sorry off the Nutella network completely. Stop leeching from upstanding citizens of the Nutella community and crawl into a hole and die. Flames off. Response. Our goal is not to block Shiraza from the network, but rather to give their users the worst possible experience so they will stop using the application. I'll leave it up to your imagination as for the methods we will employ. I suggest other developers, LimeWire, GTK Nutella, Swapper, Morpheus, et al., do the same. This is kind of like that scene from Bloodsport when Tommy Chong killed his opponent and the three judges turned their back on him in silence and dishonor, with the audience following suit. Nutella needs to turn its back on Shiraza. End quote. Creator of BearShare, flaming creators of Nutella 2. One of the creators of BearShare said he would block Nutella 2 traffic and encouraged others to do so. Most of the community pushed back and said it should be called Mike's Protocol. Not as many clients adopted Nutella 2. Looking at the history of file-sharing FAT protocols, I see committee-like cooperation among the Nutella developers who worked to develop 0.6. The Emule community essentially forked eDonkey's protocol. People never fully reverse-engineered FastTrack, so I'm not sure if any third parties ever extended it. BitTorrent has BitTorrent Enhancement Proposals, or BEPs, just like Bitcoin has Bitcoin Improvement Proposals, BIPs. The Nutella community makes it fairly clear that when a lot of developers are building businesses or large open-source projects on top of a protocol, they want to think carefully about protocol improvements for the sake of backwards compatibility and also enhancing their own apps. eDonkey's protocols were proprietary, which is likely why Emule didn't adopt Overnet. Nutella 2 was developed by the creator of Shiraza, the client which implemented every protocol. His lack of interest in peer review and desire to push Nutella 2 on everyone else bred resentment. The main lesson here seems to be straightforward. Protocols seem to evolve democratically in civil communities. Nutella 0.6, BitTorrent. Protocols seem to fork when relationships feel adversarial. Nutella 2, CAD network. Incentivizing adoption. Quote, an open network and a shared data layer alone are not enough of an incentive to promote adoption. The second component, the protocol token, which is used to access the service provided by the network, transactions in the case of Bitcoin, computing power in the case of Ethereum, file storage in the case of SIA and storage, and so on, fills that gap. End quote. Fat protocols from Union Square Ventures. I want to stay within the scope of what P2P protocols tell us in this post, so I can't answer the direct question of do tokens promote adoption, since there wasn't a mainstream peer-to-peer token. Instead, we'll have to answer similar questions. What did adoption look like? Would a token have made sense? Did people talk about adding tokens? And did people actually try to add tokens to peer-to-peer protocols? To address token-related questions, we need to understand the dynamics of P2P protocols so that we can understand if a token economy would make sense. People love free stuff. This is a boring but important point. Obviously, I think we all know that people enthusiastically adopted the fat protocols of file sharing. All networks saw huge growth despite widespread legal threats. I called this a boring point, well, because who doesn't want free stuff? The important and only kind of pedantic takeaway is that people will happily adopt fat protocols if it is worth it. Free riders. A lot of file sharing systems have free rider problems. Most people download what they want and offer up nothing in return. From the widely cited paper, quote, free riding on Nutella, link, quote, we found that nearly 70% of Nutella users share no files, and nearly 50% of all responses are returned by the top 1% of sharing hosts, end quote. So by default, everyone wants to download, but no one wants to share. This manifests in a few ways. Most users don't share their own files with the network. Among those that do share files, many of them don't share desirable files. And most users download a file and then close their client. Ideally, they would then help other users download files. Bad files. File sharing protocols had a major problem with people sharing bad files. From the widely cited paper, The Eigentrust Algorithm for Reputation Management in P2P Networks, quote, attacks by anonymous malicious peers have been observed on today's popular peer-to-peer networks. For example, malicious users have used these networks to introduce viruses such as the VBS.Nutella worm, which spreads by making a copy of itself in a peer's Nutella program directory, then modifying the Nutella.ini file to allow sharing of .vbs files. Far more common have been inauthentic file attacks, wherein malicious peers respond to virtually any query providing decoy files that are tampered with or do not work. End quote. The book Peer-to-Peer Systems and Applications cites this problem as a reason for Kazaa dropping in usage. Quote, in Kazaa, the amount of hardly identifiable corrupted content increased significantly due to the weakness of the used hashing algorithm, UUHash. Thus, users switched to applications like Nutella or eDonkey, where the number of corrupted files was significantly smaller. End quote. Bartering with bandwidth. BitTorrent does a surprising amount of game theory under the hood. Link. At a high level, your torrent client keeps track of who is uploading to you and tries to upload back. If a peer seems to only be downloading and not uploading, your client, quote, chokes them. This tit-for-tat mechanism maximizes download speeds when a torrent is new and there are more downloaders than seeders. BitTorrent does seem to be much faster than eDonkey, which also downloads from multiple peers and starts uploading once it receives pieces of a file. BitTorrent does many things to maximize download speed that other protocols don't, but I think it is safe to say that the basic market mechanisms it introduces contribute to this speedup. Optimizing how fast people can download a file right after it is shared is only a narrow chunk of the entire problem, though. Ideally, a market would also incentivize seeding after download. There are also other market needs, too, though, like file sharing and sharing rare and desirable content. Kazaa participation level. Kazaa added a naive reputation system, or participation level, based on how much you gave back to the network. If you shared more, your downloads were faster. They also let people give, quote, integrity ratings, so files they downloaded, which would also enhance the uploading user's participation level. People figured out they could just modify their client and trick the network, though, so it didn't last for long. Share or else. Private BitTorrent trackers usually enforced a seeding ratio and ban you if you don't uphold it. This works decently well as a mechanism and even encourages some users to buy seed boxes so they can get a good ratio. Decentralized trust. EigenTrust tried to address the bad file problem by layering a trust algorithm on top of the protocol. Basically, if Alice transfers a file to Bob, Bob can rate that transaction. If Bob trusts Alice's files, then he also likely trusts her ratings of others. This transitive trust property helps filter out a lot of malicious content in the network. Credits. Kazaa introduced, quote, peer points that you earned if you shared content on the network. If you received a lot of peer points, you can trade them in for prizes. Emule created a credit system that rewarded sharing content with another user. If Alice uploads a lot of content to Bob, they both keep a record of that, and then Bob will let Alice jump to the top of his download queue if he has a file she wants. Kazaa's peer points and Emule's credit system were actually used in real-life peer-to-peer with some success. Researchers also proposed better systems that never made it to a real network. Swift proposed a system for tracking upload and downloads among peers and only uploading to peers with positive ratios. In the theoretical Karma network, a user's upload-download ratio would be stored and updated by 64 random other peers in the network so that it can be reused for all global transactions. Tokens in theory. There is a large body of research around adding markets to peer-to-peer networks. If you're interested, read up on PPay, PeerMint, Karma, MMaps, and PeerMart. Links. The general theme of the different approaches is to provide a secure enough token, which can be used for in-network micropayments. A micropayment can be for different services like bandwidth, storage, forwarding requests for peers, caching information, etc. In other words, the tokens are supposed to be a generalized in-network currency that users can spend and receive in order to align incentives. Tokens in practice. In 2000, Jim McCoy, Zuko Wilcox, founder of Zcash, and Bram Cohen, eventual creator of BitTorrent, created a protocol called Mojo Nation, quoting their old website, quote, Mojo Nation combines the flexibility of the marketplace with a secure swarm distribution mechanism to go far beyond any current file sharing system, providing high-speed downloads that run from multiple peers in parallel. End quote. Sounds like BitTorrent with a token. What does the token represent? Is it a generalized currency like some of the theoretical technologies mentioned in the previous section? Quoting Jim McCoy from his DEF CON talk, quote, In this system, you all end up paying. With Mojo Nation, we keep score. We say that we will create a currency, digital coins, that are denominated in computational resources. So every unit of this currency we call Mojo represents a floating basket of goods, CPU time, disk space, bandwidth. It's merely a means for people to say, my particular resource is worth X, yours is worth Y. Let's trade. End quote. Mojo Nation, building a next-generation distributed data service. At the time of the DEF CON talk, they even explicitly talked about being able to buy and sell Mojo with real money. Quote, How do you get the real money in and out of the system? We will perform that function, and others can perform that function. A digital coin is a number. You can go sell it on eBay if you want it. Clear with PayPal. We don't care. We will be a market maker in the currency, which means that if no one else will buy or sell your Mojo, we will. End quote. Mojo Nation didn't end up being big like the protocols we were discussing earlier. Peter Thiel's quote, "Most businesses fail for more than one reason, so when a business fails, you often don't learn anything," comes to mind. Still, it is worth reading a later discussion from 2007 between Nick Szabo, Zuko, and probably Jim McCoy. Comments on unenumerated nano barter. While the whole conversation is interesting, this comment stands out a bit. Quote, "The smartest thing Bram did when stripping down Mojo Nation to create BitTorrent was conforming the digital resource mechanism to the actual behavior of the users," end quote. Reading Zuko's post-mortem link on why Mojo Nation didn't work out, he cites a few technical issues that Mojo Nation wasn't able to solve that limited the adoption of the network. It seems like the main conclusion is just that Mojo Nation tried to boil the ocean. The product was a full token marketplace, distributed file storage, a swarming file transfer like BitTorrent, and a lot more decentralized infrastructure to stitch it all together. This was likely just too much to solve in 2000. Nutella had a free writer problem. Kazaa had a corrupted file problem. Every network wanted to better incentivize uploading. These tragedy of the commons problems seem like exactly what you would expect in a market that doesn't allocate resources appropriately. People experimented with tit-for-tat game theory, issuing peer-to-peer credits specifically tied to upload, and a full-blown token marketplace. The resolution of the file-sharing wars in terms of market mechanisms seems like a case of worse is better to me. I think BitTorrent ended up winning for legal reasons, not because it had the right amount of market dynamics, but I'll save that for another blog post. BitTorrent's tit-for-tat strategy is very smart, but it seems like a lot of other market dynamics just weren't solved during this period. File-sharing protocols took off because everyone loves free stuff. Imagine if you could earn tokens for sharing a pre-released song from a popular artist. Consider how much better these networks would have been if people had to share some of their bandwidth and hard drive space in order to get their hands on a song or movie they can't get elsewhere. I think file sharing protocols took off despite the market mechanisms not being solved. All of these market mechanics didn't happen by accident. It seems like fat protocols involving any kind of resource allocation would benefit from adding an in-network currency. The fact that BitTorrent rose from the ashes of Mojo Nation shouldn't be taken lightly either. It is legitimately harder to add a full-on marketplace to a technology compared to solving the incentive problem for a targeted use case. Keep in mind that all of these experiments were happening roughly 15 years ago. Almost every research paper trying to solve these problems noted it wasn't fully secure and had issues when it came to the Byzantine general's problem. We've made a lot of progress since then. The full potential many people saw at the time might be possible today. If you liked this post, follow me on Twitter. I'll be writing more on peer-to-peer and blockchain. All right, and that will close our piece by John Backus on P2P file sharing and FAT protocols, what blockchain can learn. And it's hilarious how many of these clients and protocols that I had used in the past and didn't even realize. I remember there were times when I would download like four or five different clients on my computer just to try them out because I was fascinated by all the stuff. And, you know, back when you still downloaded music, I don't know, does anybody still do that anymore? So this is a really interesting dynamic because I am still, if you've been listening to the show for any time, any amount of time, the utility tokens argument is really difficult for me to wrap my head around, because there's definitely a credit system, there's definitely a pseudo-currency in BitTorrent if you've got a client or you've got a protocol that does in fact reward sharing and punish the a heavy leecher on the network. Like, you've got, even if you've not got a token in that regard, you're still developing a sort of currency of sorts that your protocol level reputation, or whatever it is you want to refer to it as, is explicitly guiding your protocol experience. So I've constantly, I wanted to, and I don't, I wonder if Lightning Network is going to be that solution, but it still could be a protocol level token. And I'm not leaving that out of the realm of possibility, but I have not seen with storage, Sia coin, Filecoin, MadeSafe, like all these different things, I still am not seeing yet that network effect, or that like real, like solid foundation that I think is pushing this thing to the next level. And I just wonder, I don't know. It just, I want that problem to be solved. I feel like there is a way to solve decentralized storage and applications in that regard, like on the peer-to-peer level. I just don't know where that solution is going to come from. So I really love going through discussions about, you know, what did and didn't work in the past and where the major problems were. And I find it interesting that BitTorrent was just kind of the lowest common denominator of it works. And I'm kind of interested in seeing how he thinks the regulatory environment had something to do or was a big player in BitTorrent's success over these other protocols. So I don't know, I will probably come back to this. And like I said, I'm still checking out John Backus's other works, so we may be reading more from him in the future. I really enjoyed this piece, and I hope you guys did too. Don't forget to follow him on Twitter at Backus, B-A-C-K-U-S, and of course on Medium as well. And if you enjoyed this article and want to dig more into his work, there is an ocean of links and more stuff. I've gone through a number of these links just to see what all he's linking to, and there's tons of other papers, articles, discussions. I think I mentioned maybe a third of the links specifically while reading through this, because I was going to be saying link so many times that it just got annoying, I think. So I got the ones that specifically stood out to me and or that I jumped to read a little bit of. So I definitely encourage you to go to the article, drop some applause, and check out the ocean of further reading on the topic that you can dig into. Don't forget to follow me also at The Crypto Economy on Twitter, Mastodon, which you can find that link in my Twitter description, and Medium as well. Hopefully have some more articles coming out in the next couple of weeks. And of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and share it with all your friends is a huge help. And if you'd like to support the show, you can always leave me a good review on iTunes. That's a wonderful way to help the show that, you know, only costs you a minute or so of your time. And I will have my Bitcoin donation address available. If you're getting value out of the show, it would be much appreciated to reach out and give a little bit of support in any of those ways, a review, donation, or of course, if you're about to get your Trezor wallet or have been thinking about it, you can use my affiliate link. Won't cost you a dime, but you'll throw a couple of bucks my way. So thank you guys so much. And I will catch you all tomorrow with another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.